Hey everybody, hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the electric and zero emission future that we all hope for. I'm Paul Kirby and I will be joined by various members of the EV Cafe crew, and today we've got the wonderful Sarah Sloman. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, and thank you for including me on this one. I was very excited. As we were saying before we started recording, it's been a long time coming. It's so impossible to meet people face to face these days. So this platform is a great opportunity to delve into Jordan and all that is my energy.
It is, and it's a wonderful and amazing privilege getting to know and to understand some of the wonderful pioneers, collaborators, and innovators in our industry. And today, as Sarah said, we've got Jordan Brompton. What an amazing privilege. So Jordan, you know, listen, I was doing a little bit of research on you. Not that, you know, we kind of know you quite well, but, and, you know, we can always check out LinkedIn and Twitter and get a really good picture of what's going on in Jordan's world. But in 7 short years, there have been 400,000 plus, you probably can give us an updated number in a bit, units of the Zappy. Opening offices for My Energy in Germany, Ireland, Australia, and the Netherlands. The 9th fastest UK growing company. Oh my gosh, does it get any better? Yes, it does. It carries on. You're the scale-up of the year. And we are talking in person, live and direct, to the Great British Entrepreneur of the Year. Jordan, does this ever feel real to you? Because it must be some hell of a ride.
Do you know what? When you say it like that, it's absolutely madness to hear it. I feel like I'm a caricature or something. I don't feel like it's actually happening to me. It's just bizarre. But I think it's because I'm still running a business, you know? So it's just every day you've got something to be worried about or something to deal with or something to just, I've got my head down all the time just grafting. So I don't look up often enough to hear that kind of talk. So it's wild to hear it.
Well, it's recognition, George, for a job really well done. And we haven't even mentioned sort of innovative new products and other stuff like that. But, you know, when we come to it, where did all of this start? Where did the My Energy journey start? We'll start there. I'd love to know more about the background of Jordan, but where did the My Energy journey start?
The My Energy journey started because me and Lee got on so royally well. So I went to work for him back in the day. He's been a solar installer, and then he saw this little opportunity for, he's also an electronics engineer, self-taught. And he, when he was out on a job one day, saw an opportunity to do what's called, we now call self-consumption. So a customer said to him, "It's all right having these solar panels fitted, but what am I going to do with the energy while I'm out at work? Because I can't afford a battery," and batteries were extortionate those days. And Lee just thought, hang on a minute, I could like just mess with his thermostat or turn it up and down to match the generation. So we like went back home and started designing a little product. And that's where I went to work for him back in the day. So I entered the space in my early 20s in the solar coaster and met Lee, and I just went for an admin role and then very quickly jumped into a sales role and then very quickly was like, oh, I wish I'd marketed this from the beginning and I wish I'd been involved from the beginning. And that is where we met, and I just fell in love with the industry. I fell in love with renewables and fell in love with Lee's amazing brain for spotting niches and innovation, and knew that I could market them to the world. So it was sort of on Lee's journey that I met him back in the day. And just a little bit of history, his business, he wanted to keep the business going, but when the solar coaster crashed and the feed-in tariffs were slashed, his other two shareholders wanted out, so it forced them into voluntary insolvency. So we thought it was the end of the world, but and we got bought by a competitor, so we lost IP, lost manufacturing equipment. Lee thought about getting a job and closing forever, but luckily we joined forces, ploughed our life savings and life worth into My Energy, reinvented the product, redesigned the product, and here we are today. That's when 2016 is when we joined forces, and we've never looked back.
I absolutely love hearing that backstory, because something on the Evie Cafe that we say is we're friends first. You know, you just said that you fell in love with the concept, love with each other, like made a perfect business partnership. And I think that's why you're so deserving of the Great British Entrepreneurial Award, because your entrepreneurial spirit, probably combined with his and his technical ability, has what I think is your magic sauce. That's what's created such a wonderful product in My Energy. But it just doesn't stop there. I was watching something about how you came to be in that position and how when you were younger, you were told you're not going to amount to much, you should just be a hairdresser, you know, there's no just in that sentence, but that's something that you were sort of quite taken aback by. But I love that entrepreneurial spirit within you that went, well, hang on, that I'm watching other people do very well, I'm watching other people do wonderful business development, I can do that, I know I can. And I think that's why it makes you such an inspiring leader. When you accepted that award, all eyes were on you. I think everybody saw you had this amazing like gold spangly, was it all in one suit? And just talking through that feeling, did you really not know, or did part of you so hope and so believe?
Do you know what? I promise you, to the bottom of my heart, I had no idea. So I went to that award, you know, hoping that we'd win Scale Up, because I thought, how many people are scaling up faster than us? Jesus. And there was rumours that there was a penultimate award. But then on the night, there wasn't any sort of talk of it. And I was new to the competition, new to the awards. I had no idea about it, and I went, and then I also took some of my board, because it was the board meeting the next day and it was in London, and I thought it was a good opportunity for everybody to get together, and if we won the Scale Up, then even better. And I'm sat there, and then they start doing this, all the awards are finished, and then they start this rhetoric about, you know, being the, you know, stand up if you've got a renewable energy company. And I was like, woo, we stood up. And there was loads of people that stood up. And then it was like, stand up if you've got over 400 staff, stay stood up if you've got over 400 staff. And they just started doing this breakdown. And I was like, oh my God. And then there was only like 8 people stood up. My heart was pounding. I thought, what is going on? This is mental. And people said, you must have known because you had that outfit on. No, I don't get out much. I've got a few nice outfits. And I got that for Christmas. And I thought, when else am I going to get to wear it if I'm in London at an awards? So I genuinely didn't know. And then when they said the solar company, I still was thinking, what if someone else is stood up? I still didn't know. And I just stood there and I thought, oh my God, I could feel my eyes welling up. And then I could feel the nerves because I thought, please don't ask me to do a speech. I'm not prepared. I'm scared. Like, what the hell? And then I just thought, God, I just relaxed into it and just embraced it and was like, wow. But then I also went for a bit of guilt. I tried to drag Lee up with me because I was like thinking, we both deserve this. But Lee's like, shut up, you idiot. You've been nominated and you deserve it. And I was like, you know, just everything going through your brain, like, whoa, what the hell? But it was just amazing. And it's been amazing afterwards as well, just because now our business is known in a whole new, in all the other spaces. Like, I just thought we were well known in the renewable space, but now there's a whole lot of other industries looking at us and interested. And it was a great bit of exposure for the company. And yeah, really honoured to have won it, like really honoured. I'm up there with a good bunch.
Definitely are. And I think your product, the Zappy, on the home charger element, is that you have got into people's homes. So not only are you publicly on the business space, you're so well known outside of the renewable energy. And that's why you're, I think, going to always be successful, because people tend to look to their familiarity and actually having a lot of people. I'm curious to know whether your product's going to go into a more commercial space now that you've obviously branched out of the UK. What's happening in the commercial realm for you guys?
So we get asked all the time about commercial space, and there might be some opportunities where we strip some features back and add some other ones for the Zappy, for instance, because there's so many people that want it and people fit it in a commercial space when it's not designed to be in a commercial space and still love it. But it's not our main focus. Our core focus is the home. Our core focus is decarbonising heat, decarbonising transport, and giving people energy independence, giving people their power back. So the home is always going to be our core focus. It's what me and Lee set out to do. It's our love. And it's bloody difficult. And if you get it right, then it's going to be amazing, because everybody's just patching stuff together at the minute, doing sort of like API work, which doesn't work great. What you need is the whole suite of products, communicating with each other, load sharing, and making best use of the energy. And that's what we're absolutely the best at, we're masters at, and we're quite far ahead, like years ahead. So why would we deter our focus from something that we're so good at, really?
And do you know what, Jordan? That is such an important focus. I mean, I have lamented the loss of certain companies because they had a great idea and they were bringing it to market. And then they went, oh, but hang on, before we've done that, let's go and do something else. Oh, and there's another bright, shiny thing. Let's do that too. And then the next minute, they're not there anymore. And that's why I love that single-minded vision of this is what we want to do. This is what we want to be known for. This is what we want to be brilliant at, the best at, light years ahead of everybody else at. And that is, I mean, it sets you apart for me. And that's why I reckon that you got to wear those big bangly, flary outfit that was great, and celebrate like you owned it, and you did, and it was really cool. But what it made me think about was that really is a mountain peak, right? That's a right up there at the top. And what was often helpful is understanding those defining moments that are right at the bottom, those moments when you think, oh gosh, the world's ended. I've had more of those than I care to remember. What's one of those for you that has caused you to really need to dig deep and to sort of overcome?
Yeah, one of them nearly brings me to tears every time, because it was, I lived in my old house. Can't remember, what year was it that the pandemic hit? Was it 2019? I think it would have been 2020. So it was just as the pandemic hit, and we'd just hired about 10 or 20 new people, and a couple of them in there had quit their jobs to join us. And then we was having these C-suite meetings where we were having serious discussions about mothballing the business and letting people go that had just joined us and hanging on to the ones that had been with us longest. And I just broke down. I was like, oh my God, I felt awful, because then I thought, those people aren't going to be able to get furlough, because we was just wrapping our head around what that meant and what the government meant. And I was like, we've just let a whole bunch of people down, and I can't hack it. So that really, really hit me. I was like, I spent a whole night crying. And then the next day, the government, by some miracle, decided to keep manufacturing going. And we was like, right, so we're not laying anybody off. We're not mothballing. We're a manufacturer. So let's pick ourselves up, plow on. And we made the ballsy decision to invest in more stock, because we didn't want to slow down the supply chain. So we was like, this isn't going to last forever. We don't know how long it's going to last, but let's plow our money into stock so that when it kickstarts, we've not lost any ground. So we doubled down as soon as the government said, I think we shut for 24 hours. So I had 24 hours of hell thinking I was having to lay everybody off, and spent it crying. And that was a real low point, because I thought, we've built to this point. Now I'm having to sack everybody off. And that was just a mothball the business to protect the cash and make sure it's still there. But then as soon as the government gave us that glimmer of light that manufacturing could keep going, we just made sure it was as safe as possible for everyone, put all the policies in place to make sure people were safe, like separated and the 2 meter distance and all that, and sanitizing everything, and did everything that we were told and kept open. And it saw us come out of the pandemic stronger. But that, for me, was a real, like, poof, that was one of those moments. I've had many, but thinking that we was going to have to lay people off, that is not fun.
No. But Jordan, you know, I get it, right? That you stared down the barrel of something really horrible at that moment. But it sounds to me that you already had the cojones in there to kind of go, you know, we've got this. We can double down. We can. What happened way back where, as you grew up, how did Jordan Brompton have that gumption to be able to stand in that moment, take it empathetically, emotionally connect with that moment, but then go, you know what, I've got this, and we've got this as a business. We've got this. As you were growing up, what are the defining moments of your childhood, your young life, where that mean that you had that gumption in that moment?
Yeah, I think I've always been a dreamer. I've always been outgoing and I've always wanted to be something different. I've never known what. I've always struggled to know what my purpose was, especially in my early years, but I just knew that it was to do something epic inside. I always thought I'm going to do something epic. I know it. I don't know what yet, but and I was always interested in trying lots of things. But I think one of the main drivers for me was the fact that my dad hated his job. Like so much, hated it. And he provided for us. Like, we were working class, we were skint a lot of the time, but I didn't really know. My dad just grafted so hard to make sure I never felt like I was going without, and always felt so loved and so secure. But I saw how desperately unhappy like his job made him. He used to wake up in the morning and just hate it. And I used to look at so many people in my life and my surroundings that just hated their jobs and hated, like, just, I thought, there's no way I'm born for this life, 9 to 5, and then just we pay bills and die. Like, I was one of those people. You see it on the internet now, it's cliche, but it was just not wanting to go down the same path as my dad. And my dad drummed it into me. He was like, don't do something that you hate, kid. Don't just wake up for the check. Don't. And I guess I was just always looking for shiny things. I'd try everything, and I was not unafraid to try different things and quit if it didn't serve me. You know, I've been a radio presenter. I've been on the stage. I've done theatre. That's what brought me out of my shell and gave me a bit of confidence, was doing dancing and singing. And I've had like plenty of experiences. I've been travelling. I've worked in restaurants. I've managed bars. I've worked in education. I've worked in sales and marketing. I've done, like, you name it, I've done it. But if it doesn't serve me, I will move on, because I need to be stimulated. But in terms of defining moments, dad's words have always been in there, and I guess I've had loads of defining moments since, but the biggest ones have been during the time of my energy.
Yeah.
Well, and now you're a parent yourself. You're not only an inspiring leader to the industry and the people who work for you and who will work for you, but you're also an amazing partner and mother. And we see this all the time. You celebrate your work life, you celebrate your home life, you celebrate your friends. And I think that if that's true, that you kind of carried that from being a child right through to now, it's beginning to show. And I actually learned something yesterday that I didn't know. I confess, I didn't know that there's a story about this guy. Can you tell us about how that came about? How did you end up writing that?
So when I was doing the branding for My Energy, I just loved the idea of having a character. So my friend was an animator and he'd done some animations for Disney and stuff. And I said to him, when I do the My Energy brand, I don't just want it to be a boring, like, electronics product that is just like a socket on a wall. I want it to have this whole story behind it. I want a character. I loved Gaz and Lecky. I thought that was a great concept. And I just thought, if we've got a character that kids can relate to and that there's a friendly face behind a brand for homes, for mums, then I just think it's going to be key. And we started designing these characters, and he hit me with a few concepts. There was a butterfly. There was like a friendly home. There was this, there was that. And I saw Sparky. It was like this little sketch. I'll have to send you it, of what some people in engineering call an ant. And I'm like, it's not an ant, he's not a germ, he's an alien. And I love space. Like, I love anything to do with NASA, SpaceX. I'm an Elon fangirl, you know. I love anything that makes you question life. Like, I'm one of those people that goes deep into life's questions. So when I saw this character, it just summed up me, and I just saw this whole story unfolding. I was like, there's an alien that lives on a renewable planet that loves learning about England, loves learning about our planet, and then wants to come here to see all the animals and to see nature because it's so different from his, but then gets here and is like, oh no, what are they doing? They can take so many examples from my planet. We've already, like, cracked it. So I've just seen this whole series, if I'm honest, in my head, that if I had the time, I would sit down and finish writing it, because I've only done the one book, the intro book. But it was also in dedication to my best friend's little girl who died, and I wanted to bring her to life in a book and give her a legacy. And so it was partly, you know, I wanted to incorporate her into that as well. And I donated the money to neonatal, any proceeds that a maid off the book go to neonatal wards because they saved my daughter's life and they tried desperately to save Molly May's life. So there's a lot of deep meaning behind that book. I just wish I had more time to make something more of it because I'd love to do more books. I often get asked what's happening in Sparky 2, and then I can see a YouTube series that I'd love to, you know, educate kids on renewables. I don't want to terrify them to death. I just feel like there's so much divisiveness in the industries at the moment and in the media. I just want to give them a little bit of light and a bit of encouragement, and it's usually the kids that understand this stuff more than the adults. So just to home into that.
George, I didn't know the background to the book. I didn't know the background to Molly May. And, you know, having had experiences, you know, with kids and stuff, it's a hard one, right? But it's a beautiful place to invest time and money and creativity to support and protect and give hope to that next generation. And please do, please carry on, please write that next book, because that is, that's amazing. I haven't read the book, and when I was doing the research for this, I wish I'd read it now, and I'm going to get it, and I'm going to read it.
I'll send you one, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, can you sign it, please?
<Cool. no. laughs>
But no, that is just, sorry, that's really caught me off guard, but... Anyway, I'm going to ask another question now, because otherwise I'm going to descend into a hole of my own. When you think about that next generation, what do you think is critical for us as adults, the grown-ups? What do you think is critical for us to be able to do as an industry, perhaps, you know, philosophically, in the sense of, you know, should we be positive? There's a lot of naysayers, right? There's a lot of people fighting, and I don't really understand why they're fighting all of this, but what is it we should be doing?
I think we should just be leading by example. That's what kids pay attention to, don't they? And I'm so desperate to leave the world a little bit better than, you know, when I entered it. And I think that's all that every individual can just strive to do. And it's, you know, we might not have all the answers, but at least we look like we were trying. You know, I think we've got to give it our best shot and just lead by example. That's all I'd say on that one.
And is that what's driving you to, you know, because I mean, you're a big Grimsby fan, aren't you? In terms of both, I don't know about the football, but you're a fan of your town, and I love what you're trying to do in supporting your local community. Talk me through what got you into that and supporting Grimsby Town Football Club, right? And doing that kind of thing. Why?
So, you know, I'm born and raised here. I've been here all my life. Yes, I've travelled and worked all over, but I've always lived here. My friends are here, my family are here, and it's a nice place to live. Like, it's a great community. Everybody looks out for each other. Do you know, everybody really bigs you up as well and supports. Like, it's a bit of the American vibe where people don't want to tear you down. They actually are really pro success and are grateful for the opportunity and grateful for the narrative of Grimsby being turned around, because we used to be a thriving fishing town and a thriving port, like one of the biggest in the world for fishing. And then, you know, that was sort of decimated, that industry was decimated. And now we're on the energy estuary, we're on the Humber Bank, we've got Orsted, we've got My Energy. There feels like there's an injection of hope again into the community. And the football club is just, you know, it's the grassroots, it's the heart of the town. It just engages the whole town, whether you're a football fan or not. And we started a community fund because, you know, everybody in Grimsby is linked to that football club in some way. And it was taken on by a new owner who is unbelievable. There's two guys that have bought it, but the one guy that I know, Jason Stockwood, he's a tech entrepreneur. You should look into him. He's amazing. And he left Grimsby and went off and did incredible things and has come back and bought the club with another business partner. And when I met up with him and saw his plans for the club in terms of like B Corp and investing in the area, I just couldn't not get behind it and support it. And the previous sponsor and the previous owners had been involved for like 18 years. The club was like tired, but it still had those diehard fans that just support it no matter what. And I love that. I love that passion. So we just thought, come on, let's inject some money into the town. Let's give people some excitement. And my God, the club are going from they're doing really well. They're playing Southampton soon. And they're just smashing it at the minute. So it's so nice to see that just a bit of love and a bit of TLC and a bit of cash injected in it, what it can do. That's how that came about. I'm not a diehard football fan, don't claim to be, but I do love to go and watch Grimsby.
Yeah, oh, too right. And also, as you touched on, it's that community. You like to lift each other up and not tear each other down. And where better than a sporting arena for that? And your leadership qualities do include that. You see the sort of love that you shower on other people when they have successes. And I think that's what's made you a particularly unique leader. Now, I know that you're a fangirl for Elon Musk. I know that you love space and technology. Yesterday, you met Bill Gates at the Clean Tech event. What was that?
Casual.
Casual.
What is life? I said to my husband, like, when did I go from like just being working class Grimsby last to getting a private invite to go and sit with Bill Gates for an hour? Like, when did that happen? I was going down on the train just like, what is happening? Why am I going to this bloody thing? What? Just total madness. But I thought, do you know what? And I'm going to say it, like, I'm not a huge fan. So before all the haters jump on it and is like, oh, you've gone to the dark side, because if you look at the internet tells you the guy's evil. But I like to take people on face value. Who gets to sit in a room with him? So I was not going to pass on the opportunity, and I wanted to look at him in the whites of the eyes, and I wanted to see what he was up to. And I thought, yep, I'll go and listen and see what the crack is. Turns out he's just... I don't really know. He's wanting to find out what the UK is doing in clean tech and how it can be improved and how we're going to get to net zero. He was a little bit focused on hydrogen and nuclear for my liking, but I still see a place for hydrogen and nuclear. But he seemed less interested in like the electrification sort of side, but he didn't dismiss it. He just, there was more, I could see that his eyes lit up more when there was talk of industrial stuff. But I was very much coming at it. We had to present who we were, present the opportunities in the UK and present the difficulties or the challenges that are going to help, you know, that are going to hold us back from getting to net zero on time. And my focus was on employment, because I just want us to really not get left behind in the tech race. I want people to come out of school and feel like they've got options, which they have. There's never been a better time to, you know, I don't want people to be told they can only be a hairdresser and go into health and social care and that's that. I want them to go, oh my God, I can, if I do maths and science at school and do well at it, I can go into so much after that and I'm going to have an amazing career. So I put a lot of emphasis on jobs and upskilling a nation to help us. It's all right, tech's there. Tech's going to keep evolving no matter what, but we need people to fit these products and to get us to net zero. So I just made it all about the people and the working class people and tried to drum that in pretty hard that we need to upskill a nation.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you did. It's incredibly damaging when you're in the education system and the teachers or people that you look up to as your mentors say things like that. I mean, my own personal experience is we sat in a room, two people to one computer, you know, and we were like a state-of-the-art school that had all the funding, so we were in a less well-off area. And I remember the churn and it kicked out, I should be a lighthouse keeper or a florist. Right. Well, that's got nothing to do with anything I've ever learned. It just because I said I like being outside and I like looking after people and I like, it's just stupid. But I remember you when it was so long ago now, the COP26 event up in Glasgow where EV Cafe did a sort of fringe event in partnership with Arnold Clark and then hosted an evening meal with just, you know, you guys who grow the EV community and inspire others to upskill and enter our industry. We made everyone make pledges. And I don't know how you feel about the political landscape. I avoid it like the plague as best possible. Mm-hmm. But those pledges that we made, half of us didn't even keep them. And that's us, you know, with our hearts in the right places and all the effort products that we're trying to make. How do you feel when you see the bad press about EV in particular? We touched on hydrogen, but let's just focus on EV. Do you think government's doing enough for us, for you as an industry provider?
So yeah, I'm the same as you politically. I don't even know enough about politics to even have an opinion. I'm just trying to lead by example on what I do know. But the media can lay off at the minute, can't they? Jesus, like, I'm like, what is going on with this bad press? How has the tide turned on it so quickly? Like, what is going on? And that's where I start asking the deeper, bigger questions. But I just think, right, I'm not going to get into the argument, because we do not need more division, and that's only going to get people's backs up. So I just try and keep it light, keep it positive with facts of, you know, and I also like to challenge every now and again, or just ask questions like, all right, even if you're a climate denier, you don't think that climate's changing, what happens if we run out of oil? Are we just supposed to just sit on our hands forever and not innovate and not move forward and not look at more sustainable ways, despite, just take the climate out of it? Surely sustainability should still be a positive thing to protect the environment, and because sustainability has got so many different meanings, hasn't it? But I just try and like ask questions that are going to prompt people to think, or keep just plowing out the facts and just keep plowing forward. Because I think that no matter what the media does or what the naysayers say, I think deep down people know, especially when they've driven an electric car or got solar panels on their roof or got battery storage in their home, they just know they're fully bought in, and that enough, that ripple effect is enough. And I've worked in the space long enough to know that we've now gained enough momentum, like the train has left the station, it is happening. And just to lean into that, really, and stay out of the politics, because no one wants to hear it. The second I even tweet an opinion, God, people are like, stick to renewables, don't be talking about politics. And I'm like,
for those of you listening on audio, but it's funny, because what we ask a question of people, you know, if they had a magic wand and they could make a policy or make something happen in government, what would it be? But I get the sense that you'd just kind of sweep them off the map. But no, what would that be? Would you have a view, or nah?
I just think, like, with sustainability, it shouldn't be political. So I just think no matter who's in charge, there needs to be that overarching theme that, look, we've got to move more sustainably if we're going to keep on as a civilization. It's just, well, look, and we've got to bring the third world into it. Like, I'm a real big believer that, you know, England's only a tiny part of it. The Western world, the more developed worlds, have been through that cycle of like an industrial revolution. We've become a little bit greedy. We've become very fast consuming. Now it's a case of going, hang on a minute, it's not our jobs to tell the rest of the world that they can't live like this. We've got to help them do it in a more sustainable way and learn from our mistakes. And I think we've just got to keep leading by example and then encouraging the third world and trying to help the poor as well in our own country. We've got a responsibility. Those that can afford sustainable energy, renewables on the home, putting in more wind farms, things like that, it's only going to bring the energy price down for everybody. So I'm just like, let's look at it with a real rational head. Renewables are good. It's going to help everybody. And let's put some focus on the parts of the world that are industrializing fast and not tell them that they can't or hold them back, but help them do it as sustainable as possible with what we've learned. Does that make sense?
Very much. And it's
a question.
Yeah, totally. It's triggered a thought in my mind, because one of the things that really irks me, and it really is to your point there around the use of solar power, really is going to give us sort of energy independence. It's that new phrase, right? You know, this kind of independence from the gas price, independence from Russian, you know, the things that are going on over there. But how do we sort this disparity out between people that have got drives? I'm not asking you to, you know, sort the world out politically, but people that have got drives and can, you know, put solar panels on a roof and get, you know, really cost effective and cheap energy relatively, versus those in the poorer elements of our country where they don't have a drive, they can't plug in off a drive an electric vehicle, they couldn't afford an electric vehicle in the first place. Solar's passed them by. It's a big investment to put all that sort of stuff. Do you see a time where we're going to be able to make this all more accessible for everybody and find ways of getting that cheaper energy to people?
Certainly. Like, that keeps me awake at night because I don't want to be that. One thing that I worry about, again, is just that division. It's like, oh, that's an elitist thing to like have renewables. And at this moment, you do, it is an investment. But I think the people, like I said, the people that can afford it should, because that's only going to help the wider system and bring the energy costs down for everyone. And then I've got so many ideas for like community sharing of energy and donating, and when we can, you know, when energy is a little bit more decentralized and all the homes, I'd love to see the government just mandate that any home that can have solar has it and put more investment into it. We'll certainly be looking as we get bigger and bigger at ways to make it more affordable. But I've just, there's so many exciting ways. You've just got to crack on first and be of a certain size before you can start helping as much as you want to.
I was thinking about the energy decentralization and how communities can work better together. And I saw a very heartening project from, I think it was from Devon, where essentially a community energy scheme. So the energy is generated in fields, so rather than everyone's houses, mm-hmm. and then that energy is prioritized in the local area only. And I just thought that's absolutely fantastic. And you can only get so far with pushing with policy. So, you know, we've seen new homes now mandated to have EV chargers on their driveway, and some even have solar on their roof. But other things sort of failed along the way. We weren't insisting that they had three-phase supply to ensure that solar could be fitted at a later date, or that, you know, things like the power output of the charger on the home could be upgraded, and you know, heat pumps or battery storage. None of that happened. It all seems very piecemeal. So I think what your product does so brilliantly is allow people who can, who do. And it's not even about disparity. Like, I've worked very hard. I now have my own home, but I have a driveway either. And you can't put solar on this roof. The angle's all wrong. And it's all like ancient little stones from the 1800s. There's no way. But that, all I can do is switch to a renewable energy tariff. And that makes me feel really powerless. But if there was something I could do for the community center down the road, I absolutely would co-invest or try to support it that way. So yeah, just keep pushing that message, because you're leading by example. You are practicing what you preach at every junction, and that is why it's truly such a pleasure to not only have known you for this past few years, not just professionally, but to get to know you better personally. You are as you present yourself. There is no hidden agenda, and I think that's what makes you so deserving of all the accolades you get, all the support and love from us. You know, we're not here to beef you up, we're here to showcase you. And I think that's, I'm just so grateful for your time today. Definitely
bless you, Sarah. Thank you, that's so kind.
And George, just touching on, because you were the first business to invest in the EV Cafe, to support us, to join us and partner us, and we wouldn't be here without that investment that you, because you kicked off this whole thing for us, right? And as the EV Cafe, we are very, very grateful for that support. What on earth made you do that?
You guys, I think you're all amazing on an individual level, like your characters, what you're doing for the industry, how you're keeping up to date with the news. Like, I'm useless. Like, I'm literally just keeping my head down, working on my energy, but you guys are looking after the wider picture. You've got your finger on the pulse, and I need to know what's going on. So you're a source there for me to find out. But it's just you as individuals. Like, you're all on this amazing journey. You're all doing epic things individually, and then throw you all together, that is pretty powerful. So I think anyone who wouldn't back it's crazy.
Well, Jordan, that's going on a little loop somewhere. We'll cut, snip that little bit out and throw that into the ether. Jordan, do you know what? It has been a real pleasure just spending a little bit of time with you. And, you know, we've said this before, you know, before recording, of course, that we needed to do this more often. We need to connect more often because, you know, you are truly inspiring. Your journey with My Energy, your commitment to being you in the marketplace and to doing the things that you love, supporting Grimsby, you know, investing in the future generations. I tell you, I'm blown away and just really happy to have had this conversation. It matters a lot and we're grateful to you. I'm just going to say, have you got any final things that you'd want to add? Any advice that you'd want to give or that, you know, to encourage people beyond this little world?
I guess just have a little bit of belief, self-belief, because what can be achieved when you literally just put your mind to it is unbelievable. Just be scrappy as hell. Keep fighting, keep pushing on, and actually do stay yourself, because that is a bit of a secret sauce. The world will try and stop that. The world will try and beat that out of you, but stay true to yourself.
Be scrappy and stay true to yourself. I can live with that.
Thank you so much for your time and all those kind words. I feel awkward. I'm like this when someone's being nice to me, like, what to say? Well, thank you. It means a lot.
I can offer any assurance. It's not scripted. We didn't write any of that. We speak from the heart because you inspire us to. That's our work.
I can feel it, but it gives me goosebumps. So thank you so much. It's nice. Nice to hear.
Fantastic. Well, listen, and on that note, we will say thank you to Jordan. Thank you, Sarah, for joining me today. And thank you all, most importantly, for listening and enjoying being inspired and encouraged in all things renewable, sustainable and zero emission with the lovely Jordan Brompton from My Energy. Thank you again. And do please check us out on the evcafe.org. Head over to My Energy's website, get Eddie and Zappy and Libby all sorted. Check us out on socials. Catch Jordan on Instagram. She's amazing there and on Twitter. And join us on LinkedIn and whenever you can. It's been a real pleasure, everybody. Take care and have a great day.
Bye.